Talk Breakfast. The kickoff with Steve Hothersall.
Radio City Talk.
Right, for many of you, you might have spent the past couple of months glued to the number one reality TV show. On the TV. One of the guests on it has joined us in the studio this morning. Well, two of them actually involved. We've got Sam Quick. Morning to you, Sam.
Morning.
So I'm a celebrity is what we're talking about. Tom Mayers as well, a boyfriend. Morning, Tom.
Morning, Steve.
She was just having a slug of tea then, and then I've just interrupted that. Sam, right, I'm a celebrity. How was it? In hindsight now.
Absolutely class. Like, absolutely loved it, yeah. I mean, when you're in there, it's tough. Because if you're not involved in a trial or a Bush Tucker trial or anything like that, you literally just sat on your camp bed, chatting away to Cara Vorderman, Danny Baker, whoever it may be. So there are worse
situations. It's a rather surreal world, isn't it, that?
Oh yeah, unreal. Even now we stay in touch. We've got a WhatsApp group going and, you know, every so often it'll pop up saying Lisa Snowden sent an image to the WhatsApp group or Cara Vorderman sent a message. So yeah, it's massively surreal, but I just see them as mates now and we're all dead tight.
Do you realise how hard working your boyfriend was while you were in the jungle?
Goodness,
I've never heard anyone bang the jungle drums harder to try and get you support than Tom.
I know. Well, we all seen it in Rio, didn't we? But this time it was all over social media and across the whole UK in front of millions. So yeah, he did a brilliant job, I think. Without the social media input on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, I would never have got fourth. So yeah.
The PR chief. Absolutely. Yeah. You knew your place, didn't you?
Yeah, no, I've got a chief cheerleader more than PR, but it sounded so well in the jungle that it was easy to do because you came across very well, I thought, I've told you. But it very, very surreal seeing her on TV with the likes of Larry Lamb and what have you, because we just didn't expect it at all. It was just so left field, wasn't it?
No, yeah, it was when I got on the show. Obviously, you have to keep it highly confidential because, you know, TV, they can pull anything from under your feet.
Just explain to people how you then get on the show. Give us the background to how that sort of works, if you're allowed. I presume
that's
not clouded in secrecy.
Of course, it was basically after the Olympics. Obviously, everything was going on, media opportunities, and about 2 weeks after I landed, we got in touch with an agent because we just couldn't cope with all the different things. Mm. And then it was a few days after that, he said, listen, Sam, there's an opportunity come here. Do you want to go for an interview for the chance to get on I'm a Celeb? So I was like, oh my God, definitely. Yeah, I was like, I'm a massive fan of this show. Did not even expect to even get on it. I just thought, what a great experience to go for the interview and think, you know, maybe in the future I could get on to something like that. Mm. So you just go in, ITV Studios on South Bank in London, and you sat in a little room with two women who are the celeb bookers, and you just chat for about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
So they're gauging your personality, are you? They're trying to see if you'll work within that environment.
Yeah, pretty much. And they asked me about my experience at the Olympics, growing up, what I'd be in a certain situation if I was hungry in the jungle, if I, you know, there was someone in there who I didn't like, all those different situations they ask you about. And then you hear nothing. And then my agent would try prodding, asking for an answer. Again, sorry, we don't know yet. We're still
working
out.
So in your head, you think they're not interested in me.
Exactly.
I'm not,
and there was a point where we thought, oh, we'll just sack it off. It's we'll book a holiday or whatever. And then probably the next day we found out, and then I found out probably 2-3 weeks before I actually left to go into the jungle I was going on. But I didn't tell my friends or my family until about 2-3 days before I actually flew.
Well, do they say to you, look, if you tell anyone you're not going in, is there pretty much a clouded in secrecy type environment?
Pretty much. The contract's pretty ironclad, isn't it, I think? Yeah.
It's pretty heavy. What they say is obviously you've got to... We couldn't book anything in just on the off chance that Sam did go into the jungle. So the problem is you get people ringing up with fake offers and say, oh, we could do with Sam doing a PA at this time, or Sam want to come in for an interview, and you say, oh, no, sorry, she's booked up. And then gradually they sort of process that, well, she's away for the next 3 weeks and maybe. But the list of the people that they look at is extreme. They have a very big list of celebs that they look at, because obviously it's the biggest show on TV. And then they try and... take that down based on people's what their public persona is versus what they actually are like. So that's why they had the interview, and then they group them together, don't they, into different possible lineups, and then they just submit that, and then they go with what they think the best lineup is. So Sam will have been in one of the lineups, not in some, and then the one that they decided to go for was luckily a very happy camp this year rather than a...
Well, I think that's a really interesting point, because I would have thought they'd have just continued with this idea of get a load of people in who'll be hostile to each other. A few lovey-doveys, but a few that'll really go for each other. But you were all just very nice.
Yeah, I mean, this year's dynamic was incredible. I mean, the fact that everyone got on just shows that they know what they're doing there, the celeb bookers. They know the exec producers. They've been through show after show after show, and that was show 16, so they know what they're doing. Yeah. And I think credit to them for actually deciding to go for a positive lineup. I think... two of the people in the jungle were single. Everyone else was in a happy relationship. So it just proves to show that you can make a really, really good TV show without the drama of arguments, people not getting on, or, you know, relationships and people going at each other. So I think it was only good, and I think probably what the nation needed, I think, after a tough 2016.
Mm. Did you all fly out there together, or were you completely sort of separated until you got to Australia?
Well, this was a hard bit. So I flew out, and as soon as I got through the border security and out through the welcome hall, I was pounded by press in my face.
In Perth? Is it Perth?
Brisbane Airport. And then a lady comes up to me and goes, "Hi, Sam, I'm Jules. I'll be your chaperone. The first thing I need to ask of you is your phone." So they take your phone off you straight away.
What actually happened to you was a lady approached, they made her aware that she'd meet a chaperone, and a lady came over to Sam, and Sam's there being dead open and chatting, and then another woman runs over and goes, no, I'm your chaperone. It turned out that the first lady was an undercover reporter.
Jenna. No.
So Sam's there disclosing info.
Oh, that's a lesson learned for you, isn't
it? I was there for 8 days before we actually went into the jungle. So I'm in a hotel room. You're not allowed to leave the hotel room because there's journos doing laps. There were stories of journalists taking pictures through different hotel rooms, windows, staying in the same hotel room.
These British journalists?
Australian and British, yeah. And then, so I'm in my room, they cut off my internet, they cut off my landline, so I can't make calls out. And I'm just stuck watching TLC say yes to the dress and the reason, come dine with me for 8 days.
The reason being, though, is to make sure you don't know the lineup. So while the lineup's leaked over here, that's why they put them in.
Because it's always leaked, isn't it?
Yeah, so they make sure that Sam doesn't know who's going in. She can't do any research or anything like that. So that's the idea behind it. But what they do is they sort of put the celebrities in almost a pecking order of sort of celebrity status. So the guys who are quite big, the Carol Vordmans, the Larry Lambs, they'll fly out just 3-4 days before. So they're not in solitary for a long time. Sam won't mind me saying it. Sam was considered one of the early ones.
One of the lesser celebrity names.
Jordan and Joe.
I still didn't class myself as a celebrity.
No, quite right. Well, you came fourth. You did pretty well. Right. But Jordan and Joel and Sam flew out within the first 2 days. So Sam was actually there 8 days before you even set foot in the jungle.
That's why when you see all the celebrities getting emotional in the first week, people are like, oh, behave, you've only been there 3 days. It's been what? 11 days without no contact to home.
So it feels quite a long haul. For you, when you knew you were going out, did you start to Google what names have been connected with
Of course it is. And you go on all the apps,
what names were on there that didn't turn up that you thought might have been in?
Loads. Yeah. Robbie Savage was one. And then we had,
TV.
The politician.
Ed Balls,
yeah. And then
Dr. Conrad Murray, Michael Jackson's doctor. We were prepping all these stories to ask Big Sam Allardyce. Yeah.
Lady from The Chase and everything.
Yeah, Anne Hegarty and Tyson Fury. But we were prepping like, oh man, like what would you ask her? What would you ask this?
Tyson Fury, that would have been absolutely amazing. Yeah. Well, that would have kicked off, wouldn't it? That would have been the happy camp.
Yeah, I mean, I met Anthony Carolla a few days before because I did a radio thing with him.
And what a nice boy he is, by the way.
Oh,
the boxer.
Yeah, really, really down to earth. And he said, mentally Tyson wasn't in a great place and he knew that. So
right.
That kind of struck that one off the list. But yeah, there was all sorts of rumours.
So there's a week for you in the hotel room thinking, oh, who am I going to be mixing with? Which is absolutely sort of on tenterhooks.
Yeah, a bit of cabin fever as well.
You knew Carol was going in though, didn't you?
This is a secret. We can say it now because I'm out.
Yeah. So you knew Carol was going
to
go in?
So basically, I went to the Pride of Britain Awards, I think, a few days before I flew out. Yeah. And I was on the stage with Team GB and obviously Carol was presenting the awards. And as she said her final line, she looked over to me. I made eye contact with her and we mouthed to each other, "Going in the jungle."
Oh, right.
Yeah. So then there we had a few catch-up drinks and got to know each other a bit more.
You broke the rules.
Well, I just felt a bit more comfortable than actually knowing someone a little bit, having a good conversation with them. Before I went in, because I was scared, man. Who wouldn't be scared?
Your guide to Merseyside sport. The kickoff.
Radio City Talk.
You get to Australia, they get you to jump out of a plane straight away. I sort of thought, well, that's quite easy. I quite fancied that as opposed to the bit where the other group who were walking out on that sort of, what would you call it? Sort of a board, wasn't it, on the top of a building. I think you got the better edge of the deal there, didn't you, Sam?
That's what I thought until he pulled the parachute and I started falling. I have terrible, terrible motion sickness. So texting in a car, turbulence on a plane. So as soon as the parachute was pulled, I was not in a great place.
Do you not enjoy it then?
I enjoyed the free fall.
Yeah.
But just not the gliding down.
They literally ask you very, very frankly what you're scared of, what you're not. When Sam says I'm not scared of heights, they're like, right, okay, well, let's try and get her some other way.
So they're plotting to get the worst out of you.
Basically anything. So anything I ever talked about, which I hated, it actually came true.
Yeah, they're not
pretty
soft.
Much.
How does the dynamic work when you get straight into the jungle then? So obviously not everyone was there. Danny Baker hadn't arrived at that point, had he? But the majority of the group were there.
Yeah, so obviously at the very beginning, we were split into two groups of six. So my group of five. There were six in the end.
Right.
Two groups of five. So we got to know each other a little bit more because we'd been obviously spending the whole day and a half together. Yeah. And then once we actually got into the jungle, the first 2 days is obviously just full of everyone putting their big and best show on. Because it's not natural, do you know what I mean? So you've got massive characters trying to come through, people trying to show off, people trying to impress. So it's kind of a case of just finding where you stand within the group. And I'm quite happy to take a step back. And then after about 2 or 3 days, you get people then kind of calming down a bit, taking a natural stance on everything. And then you kind of start to find your feet. But ever since then, everyone was lovely and really chatty.
You'd probably expect that with big personalities, big celebrities, to try and be sort of the dominant... if you like, the person who's putting on the show, wouldn't you? Because they're probably expected to go in there and do that. So that's no surprise.
Yeah, definitely. And I think some people probably, you know, can maintain that for longer than others. So whether it's over the course of the whole 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it may be. But I just sat back me and took it all in because I can't pretend to be someone who I am. I mean, I thought about, oh, Sam, you're going to have to get more TV time. You're going to have to do this and this and this. And I thought, you can't, and I actually can't, but also you've got to be true to yourself because had I come out first, then I would have always been kicking myself. So the fact that I was always myself in the jungle and came out and obviously finished fourth, and that makes me feel a lot better about things.
Was that the ultimate objective, Tom? Don't be out first.
It was mine. I'm massively competitive with myself, aren't I?
Yeah, we literally spoke when we were back home about the process, and we knew that the first, more often than not, the first challenge would be an immunity challenge. And I just was winding up Sam constantly before she went out, saying, "You've got to get that immunity. You've got to get that immunity." And then standard Sam, you know, she sets her mind something and goes and knocks it out of the park, gets her immunity, and I was just like, there she goes again. She, you know, wouldn't surprise me if she comes, you know, eighth or seventh now, and then she goes and does exactly, runs the table and goes to the day before the final day. So, unbelievable.
No, it's funny that immunity task, because we were joking with Ant and Dec at the wrap party afterwards, and they were saying, I've never seen anyone so serious and focused about a task before. Because in all the other things, I'd
laugh
and joke.
What was it, the immunity one?
So there was five of us all lay down, and you have three sections. So you had your head section, which they put snakes on our face. The middle section, which was full of cockroaches and mealworms, and then the bottom section, which was full of mud crabs.
And are you frightened of any of these?
Yeah, all of them. I'm just so thankful the snakes were on my face. Had that been cockroaches, I would have been in a completely different story. But you had to then hold there for about 5 minutes, and then when Ant and Dec said go, there was 10 wing nuts on a board, and you had to unscrew them all to release a ball, put the ball in the hole, and the first two who completed it got immunity. So they were laughing and joking, said they've never seen anyone so serious before a task.
Yeah. You're a 28-year-old woman during the day, but when you need to go into Olympian 28-year-old woman, you do, don't you?
So yeah. Proper competition. So you said about the cockroaches, but actually later on in the series, you got something in your ear, didn't you? What sort of bug was that?
Baby cockroach it was, but was in my master interview, the reason why I don't like anything small is because anything small that moves fast can go anywhere. And that includes your nostrils, your ears, your eyes, your mouth, wherever it may be. So that was one of my biggest fears. So
what challenge was it? Was that the one with the giant helmet?
No. That was a traumatic experience in itself. But this particular task was the windmill. So I was stood on top of Joel and we were going upside down. But even before the task had started, they started pouring everything in and I was at the top. So everything went on my head. And I just remember feeling something crawl into my ear. And I thought, it's all right, Sam, don't worry, it'll crawl back out. And with that, it just went deeper and deeper. And the sensation is so strange because you can feel it scurrying down. And I thought, this isn't right. I'm going to have to say something. So I said to Ant and Dec, listen, something's in my ear. Is
so
it dangerous if I don't
there is a get out sort of thing. That they will stop it if something serious is going wrong.
Yeah, I said to them, I can't hear. And obviously the task was to answer questions. So if I couldn't hear, then it would be pointless.
Just before it started though, wasn't it? So yeah. It was just before the klaxon. But then you said there's something, they didn't believe you at first. They were just like, you know, you'll be fine. And then you were like, no.
Well, it was Bob came over with his torch and I'd looked down my ear and I said, can you see anything? And he said, no. So then I panicked because I know there's something in my ear. So then he adds another thing on it to make it a bit more extended to go further into me. And he went, yeah, I can see it. It's a baby cockroach. So we washed it out and I felt a pop and I thought, oh, I can hear now. But then about 2 seconds later, it blocked back up. And I thought, oh, it's still in there. And I thought, am I going crazy? Even after the task, I said, Bob, it's definitely still in there. And he was like, no, I can't see anything. I went back to camp and they sent me some drops down to soften up the wax, apparently. But only to find out after I came out that the baby cockroach was actually stuck to the membrane of my ear. And it wasn't until the next day where they got the real syringe, the big industrial syringe, that it actually came out.
So you were right. You knew you still had the cockroach in there.
Yeah, but I didn't want to come across as being a diva or anything like that. So
to be fair, I think if I had a cockroach stuck in my ear, I might have been an issue of it. Are you actually expected to put yourself in danger? I think we all watch it thinking, oh, there's always someone on the side who'll get them out of this. You know, the spiders, they haven't got any venom in them, or the scorpions, surely they couldn't sting you and really hurt you. Do you have to sign something that basically says, you know, it's your own responsibility to put your life at risk there?
Do you?
The waiver form that Sam did was pretty extensive, but they found, what Sam didn't realise was, in they found 8 funnel web spiders in one of the and a snake in one of the cameraman huts. So
they're killer spiders, aren't
literally,
they?
Literally, yeah, no mess. They're like the real deal. They'll put you in hospital if you've not got something. Even if you get the antidote, and they'll kill you if they don't. But they found 8 of those in one of the traps this year, and they found one of the venomous snakes. So they are literally in the jungle. It's not like it's a very well-controlled TV set on one side of it, but the other 4 sides are open area jungle. So you were in a... You could potentially be in real trouble, but the trials are monitored. Yeah, the snakes aren't the venomous type, and the spiders aren't. But when they're in camp day in, day out, you were telling me that, you know, what was it? It was quite a funny story with Ola seeing, like, what she thought was a cat or something.
Yeah, I mean, when myself, Ola, I think Adam and Wayne were in the royal camp, you're in a separate camp, and it's probably about 100 metres away from the main camp. Mm. And I knew for a fact I'd seen a funnel web. So before you go in, you get a briefing and picture of all these dangerous things. Like, you see it. You literally just have to shout down your mic that you've seen it, and they bring in security to remove it. They're that poisonous. So I definitely seen a funnel web spider. I called it in, but they obviously couldn't catch it. And I thought, how are they going to catch it anyway? It's so small and it's already gone off by the time you get down. And then Ola, probably about an hour later, went, Sam, Sam. And I was like, what? She was like, there's an animal. So she shouted, there's an animal in camp. And by the time I'd got over to her, she said it had gone. But she explained it as being like a massive rat, which looked like a cat, which turned out to be a possum.
And then what did you have for dinner the next day?
Yeah, we had possum the next day for dinner. So
we didn't think
that one.
Yeah, could well have been.
Do you see cameramen? Or is it literally, do you feel like you're out there on your own in the middle of nowhere? Or does it feel like you're part of a TV set?
No, it is basically a glorified TV set. Obviously, you're in the middle of the jungle, but there's cameras everywhere. You cannot get away with anything. I think solely in camp alone, where the beds were, there's 100 cameras at every angle. And then on one side, which you never see, so opposite the throne as you look at it, is a big wall, a big rock face. And it's got the big, big square TV cameras in it. So every so often, you just naturally see them anyway. So, but I remember thinking, oh, that's quite strange. And I'm quite, you know, interested in how things work. And I went up to the rock face and just had a feel of it, gave it a knock. And it's basically just a big piece of polystyrene.
Aha.
Where things like that. So, yeah, you are aware of the cameras because they are so in your face. But as I say, it is still the jungle. There's still poisonous snakes going in and out. There's turkeys, possums, iguanas, everything in there that you come across.
It's still pretty harsh as well with the weather, because it's not like it's covered or anything like that. You can get absolutely drenched and anything can get in. It's not like it's fenced off or anything like that. Even the friends and family bit that we went into every day, they had to take a scorpion out. There was a spider. So that sort of brings the reality of it back home. You can see all the tents and the trucks and you think, oh, okay, maybe. And then the very second you see one of them venomous spiders, you're like, no, this is serious still.
The thing is, though, as well with it, so all the other countries, like the German, I'm a Celeb, they were in there the week after us and things like that. So it's very, very well maintained, and there's all bridges and everything. But that's what it is. It's literally just a big campsite.
It's
and
a huge industry, isn't it?
Yeah,
now,
massively.
Isn't it?
700 crew were working on the Imus Live. 700. And that was everyone in the jungle and working back at ITV.
We were just saying before you came in, actually, that the show is brilliant. But it's sort of brilliant because of Ant and Dec as well, isn't it? If Ant and Dec weren't on that show, you sort of fear the show wouldn't exist in the way it does.
Yeah. How
great were
incredible.
They?
Incredible. And when you're actually doing the trials, they're so supportive and they're laughing and joking, make you feel really at ease. But at the same time, they're very professional. Get the job done so you're not there longer than you have to be. And then at the wrap party, they came over and really made a conscious effort to come and chat to Tom and I. And they're just such nice guys and very honest, very humble as well.
It's the biggest thing, controlling the boredom. When you're in there, I sort of feel like I couldn't do that I couldn't do 2 weeks of just sitting around making small talk with people who I didn't really know.
Yeah, that is really tough. And as I say, if you're not doing anything, you just sat on your bed and you're thinking about, oh God, I just fancy a pizza or I just fancy a chips and gravy.
Yeah, because you're mad for your food, aren't you? Tom said that would be your biggest issue.
Yeah, it was. I think that's what I talked about 70% of the time. So, yeah, that was really tough, just having no food. But the boredom, yeah, gets to you. 3 weeks of it.
The funniest thing about the food was when you got the snacks and you'd got the sushi and Charlotte got one of those little micro pizzas and got one of those mini micro pizzas and she just shouted, would anybody like a piece of a pizza? And just before she could even finish the word pizza, Sam goes, I'll have it.
Yeah, the problem is, so on the forms, you have to write down your ideal dream meal, and I'm a massive fan of sushi, love it.
Right.
But the fact that if I would have known it was when you're in the jungle and you're craving food, I would have said chips, pizza.
You'd be living off rice.
Yeah, I'd be living off rice. And a big plate of sushi comes down.
I saw one of the meals, they brought you that octopus.
I love that. That was my favourite meal.
Did you cook that? I can't remember, but I just, right, did the right person win it? And who would you have done as your top three?
Yeah, I think Scarlett always had it in the bag from the start. She's a great character, proper northern lass.
She's cleverer than she makes out.
Oh, yeah, massively.
I think we all got onto that straight away.
Oh, yeah, she knows how TV
she's
works.
She's not daft, is she?
No, she knows how TV works and what's needed and stuff. But don't take anything away from the girl because, as I say, people love her. And they love her for being so honest and laid back and fun.
Yeah, she was brilliant.
Who else would you put in your top three?
Me.
Okay, third place then.
Carol, I love Carol Vorderman. I think she was very, very true to herself in the jungle. Kind, generous, loving, looked after everyone in camp and never, ever put herself first. She always made sure that everyone was okay. And solely for just being her, Carol, I probably would have put in the top three.
Off camera, she is just unbelievable. The way that she sort of spoke about Sam and the way that she gives you career advice and the way she speaks and the fact that she just doesn't change and she will not be bullied into saying anything that she doesn't want to say or anything like that. I just really, she was the biggest surprise for me going out, just how amazing she was as a person. She was brilliant.
When you left, was it euphoria? Was it sort of, wow, I can sort of put this behind?
Yeah, it was really strange because the walk up from the jungle over the bridge, that bridge is only used when you actually exit the jungle. So I've never been on that one before. And then when I got into the studio with Ant and Dec, I wanted to start bursting into tears with just, I don't know why. And I was like, keep it together, Sam, keep it together. And then when I seen Tom and I just, couldn't hold it together then. I was just a mess. But
Tom had been staying in luxury for the past week before that.
Well, coming out, then it was all about the catering tent after that. I seen Tom, had my kiss and cuddle off Tom, and then I was straight to the catering tent to have my sausage on toast with brown sauce.
Unbelievable. Yeah. They do look after you though afterwards, don't they? You get to stay there and...
The production was unbelievable. The money they put in the production from the shooting to the looking at the aftercare for the celebs. Mm. Sam's first thing they did was there was no messing about. She went straight in for a medical psych assessment, make sure she's okay. And then they really, really, really look after you very, very well, don't they?
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant.
Get
absolutely
you back
brilliant.
To the right sort of mental state and right physical state and then sort of say, right,
Well, one of the first things I did as well in conversation, I thought, you're so used to being in the cameras and the microphones. I was just a generic comment, which would be fine. I leant over, and I think it was Carol at the time. I whispered down Carol's ear and held my collar as if I had a microphone on to cover the microphone. And I thought, oh God, Sam, you don't have to do that anymore. You're not on camera. And I did it to Tom as well when I was like in the bedroom just having a conversation.
Steve Hothersall's kickoff.
This is Radio City Talk.
Let's talk about the year as a whole. So 2016, what a life-changing year for you, Sam.
Absolutely. And you reflect coming towards the end of the year, now it's Christmas, and I honestly don't know how I'm going to top it. I really don't know.
In many ways, you sort of think, how did I get there? How did that happen?
Yeah, and when I look back as well, you think about all the tough times that I've come across, and there's definitely been more hard, tough, sad times I've had in my career than what I've had over the past, 6 months. So I just think, thankfully, I matched them head on and I just got through it, had the support of my friends, family, Tom. And I think without that, I wouldn't be where I am now. But when I look back, had I not won gold with the hockey team, there's no way I'd be in the position of going on I'm a Celeb or doing half the things I'm done now. I think the magic of Olympic gold medal, the recognition of what is almost the highest achievement in sport has just been huge.
Have you picked up a hockey stick since?
No, not competitively. No.
Have you not? And is there any desire to do that? Or
I think at the moment, no. And it's solely been because I've been so busy. I've been so fortunate to have so many opportunities in media, things that I just generally like, going on holiday, all these different things that I've not had time to sit back and actually go, right, I miss this, I want to do that, and whatever it may be. So, yeah, I love hockey. It's a great sport. I miss the girls who I play with and things like that. But to be physically competitive to the international standard, not just yet, but I've got till March to make that decision.
Right, but it could be the perfect place to bow out, sort of that gold medal. You don't know.
Well, the thought of a gold medal is what got me up on a cold winter's morning when it's dark, to like bust a gut for how many hours a day, then to come home and just be so knackered that you don't want to do anything but eat and sleep. That's what got me through the days, the years, and everything else that's come with it. So for me, if I go back, I'm going to have to find another motivation. And I think the next challenge is winning after winning. So that'll be an interesting one and a completely different mindset altogether. A new one for me, a new one for the squad, and a new one for GB Hockey.
How have you found the support here in your home city, your home?
Oh, unreal. I can't thank everyone enough. And just walking through the city centre, you know, even people say to me, like, I'm on the train coming out of Lime Street, and the people are like, go on, go and sit in first class. And I'm like, no, because I'm not like that. I sit, you know, just in standard class, and I love chatting to people, hearing stories about what they thought about Armisleb, where they were when they were watching the gold medal match. And I love that because, you know, they're one of our own, do you know what I mean? I'm just like them. I'm a normal girl whose dreams have just come true. So anyone who I see in town and they ask for a picture, I'm more than welcome that, because it's me giving back to them. They've supported me through thick and thin. And as I say, this is all the best bit now. And just being home for Christmas, I'm so excited. I'm going into town now to shop. So
I bet Tom's absolutely sick of that, isn't he? Every shop.
Sam, you really, really love it. This is the best thing. Sam got to do something with Make-A-Wish Foundation where you went and saw a girl who was in Panto. You really enjoyed that. You like chatting to the kids and seeing photos of them. And I mean, we went to Tesco's. We went to grab one night's meal, and we were in there 2.5 hours. And it was just...
Not too much,
but you like having hearing the take on stuff, and you really, really make time because you remember what it was like. Sam got to meet Nicole Scherzinger the other day. So Sam knows exactly what it's like to meet someone that you've seen on the telly and you thought, wow, I relate to them. But for 2016, for me, just on as sort of the onlooker and guy very much in the background, it's easy to watch the 21 days in the jungle and forget what Sam achieved in the summer, and then see what Sam achieved in the summer and forget the 10 years before that of real, real graft. I mean, it was a year ago that Sam was, you know, just over the year that Sam had broken ribs, you know, had just captained the country and was struggling to get in the team. And just to see the whirlwind of how well you've sort of conducted yourself and gone about it was just unbelievable. But it's very easy to forget that. But you will always be known for winning your gold medal, not as an Armisleb contestant, because what defined you. You were brilliant.
You're very brave going out shopping in Liverpool, aren't you?
This is the best place.
You talk about 2 hours in Tesco. This could be a 10-hour marathon, couldn't it, in Liverpool with you two today?
Because people will tell you what they think, and that's what you want to
hear.
Yeah,
that's nice, isn't it? Yeah. Right, you've just come back from the sports personality as well at the weekend. The team got great recognition. How important was that to you? And look, you didn't win Team of the Year. It was going to be hard to topple Leicester City, wasn't it? But it was lovely to be part of that, showcased.
100%, and I think... Spotty Sports Personality of the Year, because I obviously only found that out a few years ago. it's one of the biggest events of the year to recognise sports people. And I think the fact that it is on BBC, everyone can watch it, I think that's really, really important, because, yeah, the Olympics only come round every 4 years and we celebrate that. But like you say, the likes of Leicester City, you know, that doesn't just happen. They asked me a question, they said, what's your sporting highlight of 2016 other than your gold medal? And I said, yeah, I'm a Liverpool fan, and hopefully one day we'll win the Premier League. It could be this year, by the way. You know, you have to appreciate those type of moments. But for us as a hockey team to get that recognition, like the likes of Premiership champions, Leicester City, you know, Andy Murray, it's huge. Absolutely huge for hockey, huge for us as a sport. But what was really special about Sunday was that was the first time since the closing ceremony that the 19 of us who were at the Olympics were together. So for me, that was such a special occasion.
Yeah, that's hard to get everyone back together, isn't it? What was the conversation between you all? Is the dynamic still there? Or
yeah, it was mad, really, because everyone had met in different places to meet at the venue in Birmingham. And the first thing, we obviously all met in this underground car park. And the first thing we had to do was get everyone in the lift up to the main arena. And I just remember, so when you're at the Olympics or a hotel or at a tournament, when you've all got to go for dinner and you've all got to get in the lift, you know, efficiency wise, you all get in the lift, Otherwise, you don't want to be the last one in, even though you're not late. So for me, what made me smile the most was getting everyone like sardines into this lift. And I just sat there in the corner smiling to myself. And I was like, it's literally just what it was like going to meeting at the Olympics or going to dinner with the team. So it was something stupid like that, which really made me smile and have a giggle to myself.
Mm. And you're around all this sporting greatness. You're Michael Phelps and you're, you know, the rest of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, that their current great people. Michael Phelps is an absolute machine. Like, what he's achieved is incredible. And then you've got, you know, people who've won a sports personality from, you know, 50, 60 years ago who are now old people. And you can't forget them because I'm a massive fan of old people in general because one time they were like us. They were young. They were achieving their dream. So to go from a current great person to someone who's won the award in the past, it was just incredible to see that as well.
It's unbelievable. Right, 9:56. We could go on, but we have to stop it here. Guys, Sam, Tom, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having us and obviously having the opportunity to speak to everyone there locally as well. Just say a big, 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 big thank you and have a good Christmas.
Your guide to Merseyside sport. The Kickoff.
Radio City Talk.